Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 55. And Dave, I guess that's just, I don't know if it's ironic or if it's just appropriate or what, but the Steelers-Bengals series, it has become one of the more talked about, more violent, more, I'm not sure what adjective to use, but we had a game last night that the Steelers won 23-20 on the last play of the game again. And maybe everything about the win or loss was overshadowed by everything. The Ryan Shazier injury, the personal fouls, everything that happened on the field that really wasn't football related. What was well, happy Tuesday. Another Steeler win. What are you thinking today?
Boy, we just got on and realized it was episode 55, and you know, as the great Garland, what was his last name? Garland Green, I think, in the movie Con Air, defined irony. Irony is a bunch of idiots singing a song on a plane made famous by a band that died in a plane crash. you know, I hate to open it up kind of that way. You know, with such a, I mean, we got a lot to get to here, and obviously some, you know, a little bit of disturbing, you know, stuff happened last night. But it seems like the prognosis is getting, you know, I think better. Kind of reading in between the lines here. What am I thinking here? Steelers Bengals, AFC North football. This is the exact reason why no time in the near future will Steelers versus Bengals or Steelers versus Ravens be flexed out of prime time, regardless of the record. You know, call it what you will. Bunch of. You know, car crashes that people don't want to turn their head away from, kind of thing. I mean, I had this sneaky feeling that last night before the game that this would be a game that we'd be kind of talking about until next year, and here we are. So I guess where would you like to start with Ryan Shazier?
Yeah, let's start with Ryan Shazier. And before we get into Ryan Shazier, just, you know, look, we've got a lot of lawyer listeners, and I know that you understand, Dave and I, because you've put up with both of us for a long time. We're going to give you our thoughts on this and give you our honest thoughts. And I, you know, on Twitter, a lot of people get sanctimonious and you know, try to get to moral high ground here. We're going to give you our opinions. Dave and I may or may not agree. We haven't discussed this prior. If you disagree, email us, tweet to us, but let's just try to keep it civil. So, okay, with that, Dave, the Ryan Shazier stuff, the latest news for those who may not have heard it, depending on when you're listening to this, is Kevin Colbert released a statement around 1:30 last night that Ryan Shazier does not need surgery. There is some swelling, and that there is a hope that he will be moved back to Pittsburgh. And there's no description of how he would be moved, but moved back to Pittsburgh in the next 24 hours, which I think everybody has to take as extraordinarily good news. And I know Dave Melanie just put something up on the site. I haven't had a chance to read it. So why don't you give us a little more detail of what you and she might know overall.
Yeah, for me to give you detail on this would be kind of like trying to detail how to clean a toilet or make a bed. You know, something I'm just not very good at. Melanie has done a fantastic job with the limited amount of information out there. It just went up on the site, just a little while ago. It looks like we're looking at either a spinal cord contusion or a spinal cord concussion. All right. She does a great job, I think, of kind of breaking these things down for you in terms and ways for us lay people to understand, as she always does. Read that. I think the biggest takeaway I think that I had last night coming out of all this, David, was them relating this maybe to an injury that Tommy Maddox suffered during the 2002 season, and I believe that was termed a spinal cord concussion. I remember at the time thinking, "Oh my God, I mean, is he gonna, you know, forget him playing in the near future? Is he going to be able to walk again? You know, that kind of thing." And he only missed one game. And then Ben Roethlisberger, and I put links up to this in the Shazier update post last night to the stories. One was on ESPN about Tommy Maddox, and the other was on the PPG about Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of people forget that Roethlisberger was diagnosed with this same thing in the final game of the 2009 season, and obviously both quarterbacks had a full recovery. So I think Vince Williams texted Ryan Shazier last night almost immediately after he got into the locker room, and he seemed to be positive about it. Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert, I think AR2 went to the hospital last night. Tomlin, of course, or Colbert released a short statement. From everything that kind of we know as we log on to do this podcast right now, there's hope that Ryan Shazier will be back in Pittsburgh, I think later today. And then, you know, we'll kind of see whatever swelling needs to go down. But I don't know about you. Initially, when that hit happened real time and he grabbed for his back, that's such an unnatural kind of football reaction. And the way he rolled over and was kind of trying to find feeling, I guess, in his hands and arms, I really thought the worst. And then, you know, of course, put on a board. Now, I guess I was a little bit optimistic to the fact that, man, when you see guys that, you know, whether it be car crashes or hits in football games or whatnot, you know, when they normally you see them, you know, taping the head, you know, to the backboard,
bracing the neck, yeah,
right, and all that kind of stuff. And excuse me if I'm getting all the terminology wrong or whatnot. I mean, I just, you know, trying to keep this as kind of, you know, what I'm you know have seen in the past. I kind of felt a little bit better at that point. Now, obviously, at that time, there were reports that he didn't move his legs, this, that, and the other. But the way they kind of treated him, getting him on the board and getting him off the field, I was a little bit more encouraged than after initially seeing the original hit there. So, you know, keep, you know, if you believe in prayer, obviously pray for Ryan Shazier. I mean, for us to speculate whether he missed one game or whatnot, I think is kind of silly at this point. Let's wait and see what Tomlin and everybody has to say on that. But as of right now, the initial news appears to be positive and moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, and even while you were speaking, Dave, in Rappaport, do with what you will of this report, he's reporting that he's been told he has some movement, Ryan Shazier's movement in his lower extremities after last night's injury. So clearly that's a positive sign. And all people are pointing to, as Melanie and you pointed out, an injury similar to what Tommy Maddox had in 2002, a concussion of the spine. And, you know, best case scenario would be a Maddox-like recovery where in 2 weeks the guy was, you know, fine. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And, you know, if anything comes out during the podcast, we'll let you know. Mike Tomlin will speak at noon, and that will be if you may already have gotten that information. We're doing this at 9 in the morning. But there will certainly be – that will be the next time that we expect to get any new news. Now let's get to the bad side of that injury, Dave. This is an injury, unfortunately, that Ryan Shazier brought upon himself. And I hate to say it this way, but I've pointed this out so many times on the podcast that because it bothers me, because I'm such a fan of Ryan Shazier. I've said many times, I think he is a defensive player of the year type player. And we have cataloged his faults as a player this year and in years past because his speed sometimes leads him to run through plays, overrun plays, miss tackles as a result of maybe some technique stuff. But the other thing that I and we have, you know, continually pointed out to the point where I have specifically asked Mike Tomlin this question when Ryan Shazier hit Gio Bernard and got penalized last year, basically knocked out Gio Bernard with the helmet, crown of the helmet hit, is Ryan Shazier continually leads with his helmet, the crown of his helmet. And he puts himself at risk all the time by doing that. And you can just go back. You can listen to the podcast. You can go back and look at film of Ryan Shazier. This is not an unusual way for him to make a tackle. I think it was the Bears game this year. There was an egregious one. You know, I know we've discussed it many times. And, you know, somebody yelled at me for pointing this out during the game last night. And it's just, if football is going to be safe for players, for kids all the way up through guys playing at the top highest level in the world, like Ryan Shazier, technique is incredibly important. And Ryan Shazier continually shows bad tackling technique. And it was fully on display there. He had his arms out. He was going to wrap him up, but his head is down. He's looking at the ground. He's not seeing what he hits. And Mike Tomlin, when I asked him that question and the Gio Bernard thing about how does he teach players to tackle? Does he think those are illegal hits? Do they work on that? He didn't answer me. He wouldn't answer the question. He has said at times, see what you hit. We teach him to be able to see what you hit, which is the right thing. Head up, be able to get your head to the side, see what you hit. And Ryan Shazier didn't do that. And it's incredibly unfortunate. And it's just anybody listening to the game, you probably listening to the podcast, you probably are a football fan. You love the game. You may know people who play. And I just can't emphasize enough for player safety that it's, you know, it's 1A. When you're teaching somebody what to do in the game of tackle football is don't lead with the crown of your helmet.
Yeah, and look, he's not – I mean, let's be fair here. He's not the only one that doesn't hit correctly. I mean, we've seen Mike Mitchell. I mean, you know, several of them on, around the league, and not only on the Steelers but around the league, time and time again, we, you know, game in, game out, you can probably – find an example of a player probably not tackling properly. And didn't Mike Tomlin kind of lead a campaign for this a year or two ago, head up, something or another? Seemed like...
See what you hit, really.
There was some sort of PSA, right?
Slogan,
something like that that Mike Tomlin did. I mean, they've got to do a better job of teaching these guys how to wrap. Now, it was kind of bang-bang, you know, on a short pass over the middle to, who was it, Josh Malone, I think, and, you know, hit him, you know, led with a helmet right in the square of the back. But, this is obviously not the first time for Shazier. And like I said, I mean, we've seen other guys, you know, not get injured making similar type tackles. So this is just something that but on the flip side, they don't have a lot of time to work on tackling during practice either, right? Due to rules in the CBA nowadays. So, I mean, you barely have time enough out there to get out there and run some plays 11 on 11. It's just something I guess you're going to have to take more time with doing during training camp and all, but, it is what it is at this point, and we'll see, you know, if the team's able to learn how to tackle properly moving forward.
Dave, let me ask you just in terms of I'm going to throw this up on Twitter a little bit later, but just does a game like that in your mind, not for you and me, or maybe not even for our listeners, but in the big picture, is a game like last night, is it good for football, bad for football, or it doesn't have any impact on the bigger picture of, you know, the people who like football are going to like it, and the people who don't like it aren't paying attention anyway, so it doesn't matter?
The blood sport fans are going to continue to love it. The purist will probably still watch, just not be happy with it, and then maybe some of that small section of middle ground finally gets turned off by it. I'm not out there among the people. I mean, I see what I see on Twitter, but obviously it's slanted to anything that benefits the Steelers, you know? So, I mean, that's it.
What was your, you know, one of the things is I think everybody's first concern is Ryan Shazier. And, you know, you and I and a lot of other people covering the game, you know, they didn't stop the football game. They played the football game. So our, you know, our role is to continue at that point to talk about the game and what's going on. And, you know, I realize that disappoints some people. So be it. You know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But to me, it certainly would be understandable and was understandable if the Steelers got pummeled in that game the rest of the way. And look, they got beat up in the first half. And I think it's you know, I don't want to overplay this, but I think it is somewhat remarkable because I don't know that the Steelers at halftime, and it certainly didn't sound like from what Ben Roethlisberger or anybody said immediately after the game before they went in the locker room, I don't think any of the Steelers got any encouraging word about Ryan Shazier. Yet they came out in that second half and played again, as we've seen them do often this year, played some great football in the second half, dominated the Bengals, and completely flipped a game where they were getting their ass whooped. Except for, you know, 33 remarkable seconds again at the end of the first half. I don't even know kind of where to put that in the category of things. I mean, that's great leadership. I think it's incredible professionalism from the guys on the field to go out and do that. And I have to tell you, honestly, I'm surprised that guys are able to do that, because I know for you and for me, just sitting there, it makes you feel sick when you see a guy, you know, a guy that we've watched so closely and are a fan of, to be honest. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it, to see him go off on a board.
Well, it definitely was hard to, you know, you and I have done this for a long time now as but even so, I can really see how a fan can quickly, you know, lose kind of focus in what's actually happened on the game, being concerned about a player that may have just suffered a serious spinal cord injury. But it was kind of hard for me, I think, to kind of focus. But I mean, this is what we do. I mean, I hate to sound kind of callous about it, but it's kind of okay. Let's move on here. You know what I'm saying?
Mike Tomlin had to move on. Mike Tomlin, Cam Hayward. I mean, everybody in that stadium on the field had to move on. Now, they're all going to move on in different ways, but you're right. I mean, I think I missed the next five plays that happened, and I had to go back and rewatch them at the commercial. I didn't see the third down, didn't see the field goal, because it does make you sick. But, you know, they didn't stop the game. And, you know, basically that's not something that they do in the NFL. They get somebody off the field, whether it's he walks off or he goes into the locker room or he goes off in an ambulance. They continue to play the game. And we're going to, you know, for our listeners, hopefully we'll have Chris Hope join us either tomorrow or Friday to talk about some of this aspect of playing football, how you deal with the mental aspect of seeing a teammate, you know, get carted off, or, you know, in this case, even worse with Shazier, and how do you go forward? And maybe, you know, possibly what Mike Tomlin said in the locker room, or what guys say to each other, what Cam Hayward might have said to Vince Williams on the sideline when it looks like he's in tears. You know, we got to do it for him. We got to, you know, continue to play high level football. But it was, I want to choose words carefully, and I don't think heroic necessarily is the right word. I do like the word professional. But it was a focused return for these guys kind of in the second half and a, you know, a significant win.
Well, then you have guys like Colin. Boy, and by the way, we're not supposed to use the word ass on this podcast, David, so stop using the word ass. speaking of ass. Look, folks,
15 minutes late and missed the play and tweeted, you know, he's been operating on this big picture philosophy that the Steelers don't really have a plan. They just kind of go out and wing it with stars. And he obviously turned it on, saw the score, and tweeted a couple unfortunate things without knowing of the injury. So he looked like an ass.
Yeah. How do you even tweet? I mean, and if you look at it, he's basically saying, I don't watch the games. I just read the box score and watch the highlights and I comment on it. I mean, imagine if we did that. But My God. Anyway, folks, look, what we do, we don't mean to purposefully, you know, I don't know. Sometimes maybe I do.
I don't even know what you're going to say. I don't even know what you're going to say, and that made me laugh.
Offend people. you know, David's obviously, you know, cut from a little bit of a cleaner cloth than I am, but you know, we say what we say, and we, you know, we try to say it the best way we can say it, and we don't beat around the bush with several of our opinions on here. And you know, if we offend you or say something, or if you're, you know, your kids listening or whatnot, you know, I'll try to do my best, but occasionally some of this stuff's going to slip. We're not on the radio. I mean, I know David spent a lot of his, most of, you know, a lot of his recent career on the radio and all, but anyway, we'll try to clean it up a little bit, David. So no more, try not to use the word ass anymore.
Okay, so let's just get the other two hits out of the way. The big hits, and obviously these two hits are Juju and Iloka. And look, Juju's hit, one of the things that was interesting to see John Malecki, who was a former Pitt player and a guy, you want to talk about a rough ride with the Steelers, John Malecki kind of rolling on the roster. He's a guy who made the final cut, the final 53, 4 or 5 years ago. And then when the waiver wire came out, it's that Labor Day type of thing. He made the roster on Saturday, but didn't make it on Monday. Because of some roster machinations the Steelers went through and never got a chance. But he tweeted, you know, remember, this is the kind of football every guy playing that game last night grew up on. The plays, a lot of the plays that happened last night wouldn't have been flagged. I shouldn't say wouldn't have been flagged. Potentially would not have drawn penalties 5 years ago, and certainly would not have drawn penalties 30 years ago. I mean, back in the day, this type of stuff was said on the broadcast last night. It was celebrated. Those kind of hits, those violent knock them out, stand over them type of hits were celebrated things. And it goes to, I mean, Dave and I grew up on this. In the Steelers, the ferocious Steeler defense of the 70s lived that football, and it was celebrated. So you can see how much of a mind swing. The league has brought to the game intentionally for the reasons that we all know about, that, you know, we see those and I see them and I cower because I now know of the impact of brain trauma and what the long-term ramifications might be. And I know they're illegal, but I'll tell you, honest, Dave will tell you, if it was Donnie Shell, Mel Blount, JT Thomas, Mike Wagner, any of the guys in the Steelers secondary back in the day, Glenn Edwards, knocking the crap out of any of those guys or doing that, Hines Ward doing that kind of stuff, that gets you out of your seat in a way that would have been 180 different than the reaction to those two specific hits last night by Juju and George Iloka. Dave, you agree with that?
Boy, we used to go, y'all used to go to school in my Steelers book bag, you know, talking up all those hits back in the day. You used to get out in your front yard, and if you're not trying to make a sideline, you know, or one of those Lynn Swann Super Bowl catches in your front yard, you were trying to imitate some of the hits that you saw on you know, from the 70s Steelers defense on top of it. Yeah, I mean, look, the older we've gotten and the more we know about, you know, CTE and all like that. I mean, look, am I going to stop watching the game because of what's happening? No. Does it give you pause sometimes when you see somebody strapped to a board and taken off? Yes, a little bit. But, you know, it goes back to it's what we do, David. And look, make no mistake, and it's sad to see Steelers fans kind of be ignorant here, but you know, that hit by Juju was properly, in my opinion, penalized both ways. And not only was it an illegal hit, but him taunting and standing over him was a flag as well too. Not only was, in my opinion, if you look at the rules, was Burfict really a defenseless player, the hit was to the head and neck area. So
yes. Now, let me ask you a question before you jump on right there. Two questions for you. when I saw the hit, now the refs weren't in the picture when the hit happened and Juju stood over him. And it took a fair bit of time for flags to be seen in the picture or for the announcers to comment that there were flags. And now, look, they might have thrown them so high in the air or whatever. So I'm asking this question genuinely not certain. Do you think at the time of the hit and that the initial flags were I have a suspicion that maybe the initial flags were thrown for Juju's taunting, and when they had a chance to talk about it, they also realized that they should be throwing a flag for, you know, unnecessary roughness is what the call was. I know there's not an answer to, you know, yes, that's right or yes, that's wrong. But I think you are correct. By the letter of the law, absolutely, he got him in the head and neck area. And, you know, no question, and I've been, you know, firm in my view, whether it was Mike Mitchell or an opponent, that standing over a guy, that's one of the big no-nos. And Juju certainly did it. He apologized for it after the game, said he didn't mean to. Of course he meant to. Because you don't stand there and look down at a guy without meaning to. So, you know, I get why you apologize, but he certainly meant to. So, Dave, I guess in a roundabout way, the only question I would have for you, because it's still not very clear to me on these rules about defenseless players, if Juju had hit Burfict in the sternum with not the crown of his helmet or his own helmet, is that a legal hit or not? Because Burfict is looking at the ball carrier and not the blocker. I don't understand exactly how that rule is supposed to be interpreted.
See, that's where it's still kind of gray, in my opinion, a grayish area, because you know, several people are saying if he hits him 6 inches lower, then it's a clean hit. Perhaps so, but I think when you add the two together, and look, I don't know exactly when the flag was thrown, you know, when they decided that the illegal portion of the hit was an illegal portion, you know, it might be an old snap, you know, that had to be because, you know, the way he went down. I mean, let's face it. I mean, every referee didn't see it happen. I mean, or they shouldn't have. You know, if they're watching what they're supposed to watch for, but you know, more than, I think the biggest takeaway and even if he would have hit him in the sternum, okay, you could really mess somebody up with that. I mean, because he obviously did not see him coming. Even if he would have caught him out of his eye, and probably did last second, there's no way you can prepare for that. Okay, so
well, I'll tell you, just as an aside, the worst one I ever saw of that recently is in that punt return, the Seattle player, and I think it was the Cowboys and the Seahawks in a 4 o'clock game, you know, full speed, didn't see a guy, buried him in the sternum, no flag, no nothing. It was a legal hit, but absolutely just shattered the guy. And it was, you know, it was the type of thing where you saw it and you realized immediately the guy might be fighting for his life on the field. And, you know, it wasn't to that extreme with Perfect. You're right. You can absolutely devastate a guy in that situation. And Juju did. You know?
And look, when you hit somebody like that, clean or not, you know, and he goes flying, he could hit his head on the, you know, on the ground, of course, had suffered a serious concussion or brain injury on top of it. So, look, I'm sure we're going to get more clarification. I tweeted out, that, you know, go watch the football ops video and read the rules that I linked to, that I'm linking everybody to. You may differ whether or not it's a blindside hit, but I think the biggest takeaway in all this is the fact that, you know, and I kind of said it right from the get-go as well, too, that, you know, head and neck area, you know, is the biggest thing with here. And they've got to do, I mean, how do you legislate or, you know, how do you try to do a better job with this? Now, do I think Juju went into that play thinking, boy, I'm just going to you know, I seriously try to hurt Vontaze Burfict? Absolutely not. This is a little bit different than the Rob Gronkowski, you know, hit on the Bills cornerback this past weekend. It was a block meaning good intentions.
It was a football play.
Right, sure. That you know, bad results unfortunately happened, and it was illegal. And you know, look, the testosterone's flowing, the standing over them and all. You know, probably almost a reaction more than premeditated, I guess. But you know, look, it is what it is, and I stand by the fact. I think both flags were. Or both penalties were rightful in that situation. And I do expect Juju to be fined. And I do not expect Juju to be suspended a game. You know, we'll see. The optics, of course, don't look good with Juju standing over him. But, you know, and it's really the same thing goes for George Ioka. I mean, that's a flag. That's a finable flag at that on his hit on AB in the end zone. Fine him. George Ioka, obviously probably not a first time. I don't know if he is a first time. It doesn't seem like
Ioka's got he is known. Look, his reputation is a physical safety. That's, you know, he's earned it.
Right. But okay. And then this goes back into the Mike Mitchell category. Mike Mitchell is a physical safety. Just like I don't view, Ioka as a dirty player. I just view him as a hard-hitting player, you know. So, I personally don't think he deserves. Of course, we'll have to look and research his history real quick. But I don't think he warrants a game suspension. And the biggest thing here, why I think Steelers fans are rushing to the defense of Juju, is A, it's a Steelers player. B, it's the Bengals. C, it's Juju, everybody's darling little Juju. And D, it's perfect. Okay?
Right.
So I think when you have all...
all of the above, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I think you get a yes there. People just, they throw all that into the situation here, and they want to come out saying, well, karma, and look, I'm a huge believer in karma, David.
For those who didn't know, it was Antonio Brown's word post game. Basically, his answer to every question was karma. So
right. Yeah. And I am, you ask my wife. My wife is the same way. We run around all the time. Karma this, karma that, and all. It's a wonder my site doesn't crash 15 times a day. I walk around with a karma target on my back. Change the site to Karma Depot, whatever you want to call it. To me, karma.
By the way, I guess AB was walking around the locker room yelling karma. There's a video where he was yelling karma and told Juju he'll pay the fine for the perfect hit. For what you will.
Yeah, I mean, look, let the hit speak for itself sometimes, I understand why they're doing it. Look, I mean, perfect. We all know, you know, the history with him, not only with the Steelers, but league wide. And I get it. He had it coming to him. Yes. Look, even my eyes kind of perked up when I saw it was 55. I just wish it was a little bit cleaner hit. You know, then we could really have, a little bit more. Less sympathy, I guess. But, I mean, look, you never want to see anybody hurt. And I'll write scathing articles about perfect, I'm sure, moving forward. But at the same token or in the same notion, don't come off and try to defend Juju here. It was an illegal hit. Let's move on.
One of the things I tweeted 5 minutes before that Juju hit was, of all the things that have so impressed me about a guy who's just turned 21 years old, Juju's speed, we've talked, it's his toughness. And we talked about the other, I can't remember which game it was, Dave, was it the Lions game or a few weeks ago, where he made that contested third down catch knowing he was going to get smoked over the middle. And he gets up and on to the next play, and he's shown to be incredibly tough. And look, to Juju's credit, you know, a play or two later, two plays later, there's a play down the right side, and he's a blocker. He's a receiver blocking down there, and it's pretty damn close to the identical situation, and he sticks his head in there, and he does it right. He gets it on the shoulder and doesn't get his head in there and doesn't hit to the head. So You know, he didn't shy away from getting back in the game and continuing to stay involved, and, you know, on he goes. But he is, you know, I'm sure there's some Steeler fans who relish the fact that he stood over perfect. I really wish, you know, I would almost, yeah, I wish he had not done that. But the rest of it, it was not a, you know, some other people are tweeting about this. It was an illegal play. It was not a dirty play. Iloka's hit, you know, again, we go into an area that I hesitate but occasionally venture into. And the thing about Iloka's hit, first of all, Antonio Brown just, you know, every game we say it, something else happens where you just say, my God, how did he do that? And he caught that football, and the guy crashed his head, launched himself helmet to helmet. As AB said, it was clear helmet to helmet. He targeted my helmet. He did, and the guy catches the ball, lies there on the ground, and you wonder, you know, is he dead? Like, what's going on? Is it, you know? And then he's doing a snow angel and celebrating, and pops right up, and it's the game tying touchdown. Absolutely incredible. For Iloka, you know, much like Shazier, he led with his helmet. He was looking to me, it looked like he's looking at what he's hitting as he's going through the air. So, look, it's going to sound like this is black and gold. And I gave you my very candid view of Ryan Shazier. So, I just think Iloka's hit, in my mind, there was a different level of intent versus Juju's hit. Again, no way to prove it. I could be wrong. Just my personal opinion. He launched, he knew what he was doing. He needed that ball to be on the ground, and it would have been well worth the penalty, I'm sure, in his mind, if AB didn't catch it. And he caught it, and he's going to get fined. And, yeah, I don't think either guy will get suspended, pending, as Dave and I said, not completely sure of his past history, but pending his past history. But, you know, you can argue that the launch there and the made it a little more significant. You know, maybe that's a biased view of the event.
Boy, can you imagine Bengals fans' reaction if he gets suspended and Juju doesn't? Oh, wow. Which was the dirtiest of the two? You know, I think. The optics of Juju standing over perfect make it worse. Okay, but like I said, I don't think
and let's be honest about it. Perfect being hurt and AB getting up makes it appear worse too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then look, I mean, Juju, to the best of his ability, he tried to kind of, you know, he didn't purposely stick his helmet right in Perfect's face mask. Okay, right. He, you know, seemingly in a bang bang moment, tried to lower, you know, and hit lower. He just didn't, you know, and sometimes really the other player is going to last minute kind of duck as well too. I stand by the fact both hits were illegal, both were properly flagged. Now we'll leave it to the league and see, if any guys miss any time moving forward here. All right, now let's we are on this 40 minutes into this show. All right, now let's go back to the start of the game here. Warm-ups. AB comes out, and to my understanding, AB's routine was a little bit off, you know, kind of in full uniform, right out of shoot is kind of rare for him during warm-ups. Really, to my understanding, by the reports, didn't get lathered up, if you will, during his workout, his warm-up. Really not full speed workout. I initially thought maybe this was dog and pony with him out there before game time. All right. Now he was obviously active. And look, I mean, if you have a decision to dress Antonio Brown, if Antonio Brown tells you he thinks he might be able to give you 17% of the snaps versus him being active versus James Harrison being active, I'm going to dress Antonio Brown. Sorry, folks. And really, same with Daniel McCullers, okay? But he ended up being active. Even when it was announced that Antonio Brown was active, the fact that Justin Hunter was also active made me think, maybe we're only going to see Antonio Brown for about 17% of the snaps. I'll tell you this, I didn't have the luxury of making this decision last night. If I had opportunity to bench Antonio Brown in a fantasy league last night in lieu of a guy like, I don't know, LaFell or Bryant or Juju or something like that, I would not have started Antonio Brown, even after it was announced that he wasn't on the inactive list. Now, man, if that guy tells you he can play, he's going to play. And it's just one other thing with him, you know. Can you believe the game that he had supposedly on a very, very questionable toe? I mean, can you imagine him playing that game last night without him?
Well, yeah, obviously you wonder about the Steelers playing any game without Antonio Brown with what he does. And I'll have to tell you, if you didn't know he had a toe injury, you wouldn't know he had a toe injury. Obviously neither of us were in the stadium, so you can't see kind of when he's walking to the sideline at the end of a series or, you know, maybe between plays exactly how he's carrying himself and what his gait's like. But it was not evident, obviously, from beginning to end. He was Antonio Brown. Now, you know, we can debate. We saw him with a clear drop on a big third down play. That was a big drop and a ball in his hands and maybe another ball or two that he could have caught. I mean, he had a lot of targets in this game and fewer catches. But, you know, I'm sure everybody's willing to overlook all of that for what happened. And, you don't know. You know, I kind of doubt that, you know, AB running a third down slant when he's catching every other ball, that he dropped that one because his toe was bothering him. But, you know, far be it from me to give you a definitive answer on that. Guys drop balls. It happens. And last week we saw it in spades with all the other Steeler receivers. So even though Antonio Brown's as good as there is in the world, even he drops a ball every now and then, and happened to happen last night. But another, as you say, extraordinary game and a huge key. And one of the things that isn't going to be in that stat line, by the way, is that play at the end of the half, the last from scrimmage play other than the field goal, that he had his guy beat, and it would have been a touchdown if I think it was Dre. If Dre doesn't grab him, it's 6 points. And, you know, a crazy, again, 30-second go the entire length of the field and put 3 points up by the Steelers that, you know, we can see now how big that 3 points was.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's going to drop an occasional ball, and William Jackson III made a nice play in the end zone. I had that play circled for sure until the William Jackson III giveth and or taketh and the William Jackson III giveth on the play to Le'Veon Bell there that ended up in the end zone on a touchdown. AB was AB. Let's move in quickly kind of through the game here now, and it's really kind of hard to do only having gone through this thing one and a half time.
Let me throw one more thing at you, just big picture stuff. You know, with the Steelers have had slow starts in games, a lot of games, and I think, you know, rightly or wrongly, people can and we can point to the Ryan Shazier situation, but the Steelers were off to a terrible start even to that point, down 3-0 with the Bengals, you know, somewhere deep in Steelers territory when Shazier got injured. These slow starts are something that we're going to have to address, but the larger question I want to ask you is, you know, leadership, Tomlin, professionalism, how important is that? And do you think that was something that occurred because of the closeness of this team and the leadership that already existed? Or do you think this was a special night that this was – because I think it's the formal. I've always said I think Tomlin's a great leader of men, and guys like playing for him, and there is that cohesiveness in the locker room. And they get a chance to be together at halftime and talk about some things and go out and do things. And I it's one of those unquantifiable things that to me is significant.
I think the answer to all your questions is yes. I mean, you have a nice blend. of veterans to young guys in that locker room. You have great leaders, I think, and guys like Cameron Hayward, obviously Ben, Ramon Foster, Arthur Motes, guys that, you know, have been around for a while and probably unfortunately seen several, you know, serious injuries during games and guys, you know, kind of carted off and whatnot. Then you have a guy like Tomlin that, you know, you really rarely see him flustered. You know, sometimes you can look at him, not all the time, because he'll put the fist bump and the wink and point at the camera and all like that. But a lot of times it's hard to really know whether or not the Steelers are winning or losing. But that might be mixed in. That fact is, you know, you talk about slow starts, David. You know, when has this team ever started fast?
Jeez.
I guess the
time was the last Bengal game was the last time. And then when they had those two great opening drives, but. It's been a while.
I mean, do you ever go into a game thinking, analysis sometimes will tell you, man, Steelers should be able to get out to a 13 or 14 nothing lead in these in X game. But how many times are we able to say, how many times are we on cruise control at the end of the first quarter? Against the Chiefs a couple of years ago on Monday night. You know, that's what gets me. First quarter of the game, man, people are tweeting me, fire this guy, fire that guy. I mean, geez, haven't you watched this team enough to know at least wait until after the game to fire somebody? Because we've seen this from this team time in, time out, year after year. Heck, so, at least as long as I've been blogging about them since 2008 and well beyond that as well, too. You know, so, Mike Tomlin is a good leader of men, a very kind of even-keeled guy, I think, and he relates well, I think, to his players as well. And I think on top of it, as I said, I think the mix of the type of guys – that they have in that locker room and the type of leadership that they have as well too, you know, helps. So I really think the answer to all your questions is yes.
Okay. So, you know, again, we'll do some of the game and now we'll do some of the game tomorrow and recap Ben's comments and Mike's comments. But, the Steelers, Dave, they got whooped at the line of scrimmage offensively and defensively in the first half. And that's as good as, you know, my fears of Andy Dalton and A.J. Green were all realized in that first half. And A.J. Green didn't have a catch in the second half, I think. I think he had 7 for 70-something and 2 touchdowns in the first half. Had his way with Cody Sensabaugh. The Steelers were getting run on aggressively. We didn't mention Joe Mixon went out of this game as well with a concussion or a head injury. But this, you know, you won't see. I mean, that was Andy Dalton and AJ Green at their absolute best in that first half. They were really good.
Boy, that might have been the best game we've seen out of Dalton in quite a while. I think, you know, 21 of 36, 234 yards, 2 touchdowns, second half. Obviously, he was not, you know, his receivers dropped. I mean, A.J. Green even had, 2 drops? What was there, like 2 other drops in the second half as well? So, Dalton made some incredible reads, some incredible throws. Cody Sensabaugh really was no match for A.J. Green. Yeah, as bad as Cody was, I was shocked. I got to admit, I was shocked that Mike Tomlin yanked him for Cameron Sutton in the second half. Was it the right move? Give us time to go through the tape to see how effective Sutton was. Obviously, the results. I mean, Green didn't catch any pass. I mean, you could look at the stat book first half, second half, and say, well, obviously Sutton was great. I don't think we can say that.
But that touchdown was him getting torched. The one that got called back is right. And, you know, again, not 100% sure how the safety situation was there. Sean Davis looked like. He was the near safety on that play, and it looked like Golden eventually was the guy who got there. But Cam Sutton was in a trail position on two questionable touchdowns called back on Martavis Bryant's kick return touchdown, and certainly I can see why the hold was called on Gio Bernard. I mean, when you put your arms right like that and you're facing the guys from behind at that point when he got by him, when T.J. Watt got by him, you know, it's not a pretty look. So I can see why the ref threw the flag, but you can obviously argue against the flag looking at the play over and over.
Yeah, a little questionable, I thought, on the call on Bernard, for sure. And, TJ Watt seemed to know it right from, right.
Well, he knew when the flag was down, why it was thrown. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Bring it on back, boys. but like I said, how many times did we see?
I agree with your sentiment. I was shocked that they went to him. Now, we haven't seen him in practice. We haven't seen him at all. I mean, you know, we saw him a couple of weeks in preseason, but it was very somewhat amusing to hear Mike's comment after the game when he said we needed a spark. You know, obviously things weren't going well in that first half. This is no slight on Cody. We just needed a spark. Well, of course, it's a massive slight on Cody because he was getting it handed to him. So even though Mike didn't want to point fingers, his actions spoke volumes.
How many times have we seen a player benched, especially a defensive player benched, you know, flat out
game
during a game, especially a defensive player? I mean, you just really.
I don't remember any, not recently. I'm sure it's happened, but I don't remember any recently.
Yeah, and we might forget about this one, I guess. I don't know. look, I mean, it was the right. You know,
who starts this week?
Good question. He definitely left the door open for Sutton to start. Look, Cody Sensabaugh, when Sensabaugh was originally signed, I thought, okay, this is a guy that probably may be best suited to play in the slot, who can also play outside. That's kind of what I thought of Sensabaugh initially. Well, I mean, he's sure got a lot of work on the outside, I think, during camp and all. And then, of course, there was a battle between, I mean, here we look back now at training camp, David. We were talking about a Ross Cockrell versus Cody Sensabaugh battle for potentially the starting job. My, how things change quickly. And now here we are. He had to do something, because what was happening with Sensabaugh, not just in that game against AJ Green, but really going back since Cody Sensabaugh has taken over, has not been great at all. So, you know, I wonder how. I mean, look, Cameron Sutton, we've heard smartest kid, you know, one of the smartest defensive cornerbacks in the draft, yada, yada, knows everybody's position on the field, this, that, and the other. But even so, he missed a lot of time, and you can only, you know, there's something to be said for getting practice time on the field as opposed to getting in the classroom, in the film room and all. And we'll see. Do I think Cameron Sutton should start against the Ravens? Heck, why not?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think he will. I think he'll end up getting the start and go from there. Let's talk about the other player who got a lot of work and then got injured again, and we'll see how severe the injury is to Tyler Matakevich. But you know, we've seen some things that are encouraging in the preseason. Certainly, Matakevich has a little bit of he's really smart. But at the NFL level, he is not an athletic player. This is a guy who is as productive as you could be in college. That's worth a lot. And being a smart guy on top of that, well, if you're productive and smart and you're a fantastic athlete, you go third in the draft. There's a reason you go in the seventh round and everybody's passed on you six times, is because you have a deficiency in your athleticism. Unfortunately, you know, we saw that with Tyler Matakevich. I've advocated LJ Fort as being the guy to be the backup on both those inside positions. Again, we'll look at the film and see how things look, but wasn't a great period of time in there for Tyler when he got his opportunity with Ryan Shazier down. And from my first blush.
No, it didn't look. I mean, we'll see more from the end zone view, but I think there were at least three plays I thought, man, he looked like he might be in the wrong gap there. It was either that or him having problems fighting off a block at the second level. And believe it or not, he played 41 defensive snaps in that game. And I guess that is believable, being as how, you know, he took over for Ryan Shazier early, and then when did he exit? Fourth quarter, third or fourth?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it was
Because Fort played 17 snaps, and the Bengals, really, their final couple of series weren't very long, right? So it might have been a third-quarter injury because, boy, the Bengals sure put together some drives there, first and second quarter, that extended time. I'm trying to remember exactly when Matakavich left, but in comes L.J. Fort, and yeah, overall, you know, not a good feel about Matakavich and his play, but you know, how many times has he been in the game this year where we've said, especially in goal line situations, man, I kind of thought Matakavich should have been there to stop that or keep him out of the end zone, you know, kind of thing there. Obviously not the athletic specimen that Ryan Shazier is, and second, just the kind of the see to do, you know, the kind of processing, I think. And Matakavich is known as, you know, a smart guy, but I think just the processing and not being in those situations also has played a factor in that as well too. Now, are you going to be able to upgrade over him? Look, L.J. Fort, I think, moves better out in space, you know, kind of similar to what you would expect out of Shazier out in space. But is he north-south, you know, hitting gaps, you know, on the level of Ryan Shazier? Absolutely not. So, I mean, there's definitely, you know, look, I mean, it's a good conversation if we're talking about Ryan Shazier being back on the field again this year. And I'm not even going to speculate about that. And, you know, I think most people are already anticipating him to at least miss this game, you know, against the Ravens here next week here. They're going to have to do something here. We don't know the extent of Matakavich in his injury, but it didn't look good. You're going to have to probably either call up, what, Keith Kelsey off the practice squad this week. Do you, I don't know, David, do you think about re-signing, bringing Sean Spence back in the fold right now because of the familiarity aspect? Do you maybe even think about a guy like Jordan Dangerfield, who's really a safety, who's played in the box quite a bit, as maybe a guy, you know, that you can play alongside Vince Williams? I mean, that's out there. That's a stretch, obviously. But, I mean, it's hard to bring somebody off the street right now, you know, to play. So, you know, I think it would be Fort, and then I think you're going to see a roster move or two this week, David. You know, maybe Keith Kelsey's a guy that comes up, but you're obviously thin. You were so thin last night that, you know, Arthur Motes was probably trying to brush up on a playbook real quick on what happens with an inside linebacker.
That's a good point too. And you know what? Of all the things you said, maybe that's the most likely is, you know, you look to move Motes inside because you have depth outside with Chicolo and Harrison.
I just go on record and think that would be the most foolish option right there to me. But that's just me.
Yeah. And obviously that, you know, that would be, he would be, you know, he's not going to be in a starting role. He'd be in a backup role to L.J. Fort, assuming that neither guy can go on Sunday. I would think option number two is get to the waiver wire, and whether it's Sean Spence or somebody else, is bring somebody in and just so you have a body. But, you know, I hadn't really thought about the Motes one. And just because, again, it's a short week and familiarity, you know, you fly a guy in today, he's going to get to, you know, he's going to get to work for a couple days. But, do you want to make a roster move? Because obviously it would require a roster move and disrupt things. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I guess I would lean toward Motes as being what they would do if it's a short term, if they view this as a short term thing. But yeah, I think you laid it out well.
And don't forget, Steven Johnson's on the Ravens right now.
Yeah, he's on what? He's on what?
He's on the Ravens roster.
He's on the Ravens. Yeah, right. He's on the Ravens roster. Right. He did cross through my mind, and I remembered somebody had signed him, and I couldn't remember who. It all shows you just, you know, again, when you have Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and Ben Roethlisberger, and I, you know, I said after the first pass, I thought the Steelers should have nailed it out at the end of the first half with all the things that had gone wrong and down 17-0 inside their own 20. I didn't want to see Ben throwing the ball around with the option of, you know, giving up more points if a mistake was made. And the first throw he made, you know, whoever it wasn't a Loka, Dave. I can't remember which guy it was for the Bengals that came in and cleaned out Antonio Brown. But if he had been paying attention to the football, he might have been able to catch the football. And lo and behold, the Steelers with the 2nd and 10 still inside their 20 with, you know, 30 seconds to go, run a 33. And if you're a Bengals fan, this has to absolutely drive you insane. You can't give up a 33-yard screen pass to Le'Veon Bell and then have Antonio Brown get behind your corner without a safety there and have a pass interference play so that you give up 3 points. They go, you know, essentially 85 yards or whatever the number was in 20-some seconds, and you give up 3 points at the end of the half, which now we see, how significant they were. You got to hate the defense, but it just goes to show when you have, you know, three elite guys like that, what they can do. We saw it at the end of the Packers game with, you know, the same group. We saw that 3 points. That was crazy good.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think I tweeted this before the game. If we learned one thing I said this during the game against the Seahawks and the Eagles. If we learned one thing last Sunday night about the Steelers game against the Packers, 30 seconds is a lifetime for Ben Roethlisberger. At no point now, at any time, should people expect the Steelers to kneel on the ball, you know, unless there's like 3 seconds left and you're deep in your own end. Like it or not, that was huge, that drive. I know it was only 3 points, but I mean, that was a huge, I mean, just from the morale factor, you know, going in, you finally got some points on the board. If you get a stop, yeah, the Bengals are getting the ball to open up the second half, but you ended the half on a positive. And it was a half full of a lot of negatives in, you know, more ways than one. So, you know, I don't think enough is made maybe about that drive to close out the half. And boy, the Steelers defense came out roaring in the second half. Biggest takeaways. Okay, we're over at an hour here. My biggest takeaways from the game, and we can kind of dissect these real quick here. Never doubt AB. Second, okay. Boy, they really looked deflated after that Shazier injury, and with good reason. Even kind of before that, they were getting manhandled. Overarching thought in the first half and really into the second half as well. Boy, they sure ran the football well up the gut with whoever, whether it be Mixon or Giovanni Bernard. Dalton was extremely sharp, I thought, throughout the game. That's another takeaway. What's another one here?
Chris Boswell never misses when it matters.
Yeah, Chris Boswell stays hot in Cincinnati. Ben, you know, really, you know, ended up being that one guy we haven't really talked about so far in this show.
And Le'Veon Bell, you know, quietly puts up 180 yards from scrimmage.
Yeah,
and the touchdown, the play at the end of the first half. I mean, the fourth down carry just runs over Drake Kirkpatrick. Hey, kudos, Mike Tomlin, going for it on fourth down. Love it. It was the right call. If he didn't make it, it was still the right call. 20-10, you got to go down and get points. They did. They went for it, and I liked how they did it too. Ben standing at the line forever. Now you're holding your lineman in that stance, and that puts you in a little bit of risk that somebody moves early. But I think it really puts the defense off cadence a little bit. And, you know, you've seen Ben often enough either call timeout or just take the delay a game penalty there. And the Steelers, because they're trying to draw him offside, I like that they did all of that and then still went for it. I thought that was great.
Yeah, well, look, Ben wasn't as sharp as, you know, I you know, was against you know, last couple games, but sharp enough, you know, especially when it matters the most there. I thought on that fourth down play, the way that clock was ticking, I thought, oh man, are they just trying to draw them off, going to burn a timeout here? But I like that. And boy, the read option kind of by Ben in the game as well to the left side, that caught me by surprise, and I worried that Ben may have went into a slide a little bit too early there. More takeaways from the game defensively. You know, Cody Sensabaugh, obviously not a great game at all. I thought Robert Golden had a nice hit on a pass breakup, I think, over the middle there. They were aided by some drop footballs. Make no mistake about that on the defensive side of football.
But Dupree continues to...
Boy, you know, what about that? What about that?
Made a play at the end. He continued, but you know, he also missed that one sack.
I'm guessing that he just thought he got rid of the football and he didn't want to take a roughing call or whatnot, you know. But boy, that to see that thing live, you're thinking, what the heck? What the heck's going on here? You know, a lot of people are going to complain about some three-man rushes at certain situations, but you know, that's nothing new there. We've seen that before for them to try to drop some. Into coverage there. I don't know what other overarching takeaway. You hit on Bell. You know, Bell really, you know, not a huge game rushing the football. You know, I think defensively with those runs, David, it was, you know, I haven't checked the successful percentage amount. I mean, it's obviously, I think, going to be higher than what you want, but the longest run was 13 yards. Okay. And, you know, you could add on to that. Well, other than that, how'd you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln? But you know, the thing is, his longest run was 13 yards. I mean, just don't let these things go for 15, 20, 25 yards, and they didn't. I mean, live to fight another day with these ground carries, and that's what they did. You know, negative one still, like they didn't get a turnover, right? So they're negative one for the season in the turnover differential. It sure would have eased things had they gotten back to zero on the season at some point during the game.
No doubt the stats are really similar in this game. Time of possession, dead even, yards, you know, first downs, all that stuff. I mean, turnovers, 1-0 Bengals, penalty yards, insane. I mean, the Bengals, I think it was the second, the highest, most in their franchise history, maybe the second most against the Steelers, something like that. And one penalty that we haven't mentioned that was incredibly significant was the Geno Atkins roughing the passer call for a guy who, to me, one of my favorite players to watch, an elite player, Aaron Donald, before Aaron Donald came along in terms of an interior pass rush guy who's not at all considered a dirty type player, just – you know, it was a deserved flag. It wasn't, you know, anything egregious or dirty. It was just a penalty. And it was a big penalty against the Bengals. And it just, to me, it just epitomized again for the Bengals. Again, they lose a game. Honestly, they had no business losing. They're up 17-3, playing for their playoff lives, getting the ball to start the second half. It's just, if you're the Bengals, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't know if it just, you want to put it all back on Marvin Lewis or it's to the culture of the Bengals. Dalton had a good game. That's just a game you can't lose if you're the Bengals and you want to be an elite team. And of course, if you're the Steelers and you are an elite team, those are games you come back and find a way to win. And that's what happened.
Boy, you know, 173 yards of penalties. You want to talk about hidden yardage, right? Oh, Lord, that's a lot of hidden yardage. And look, I mean, I thought a few of those calls against them were questionable. One of those pass interference, I think, on who was it? Dre Kirkpatrick, I thought was
when he got Martavis's wrist for half a second.
Yeah, I thought that was
that's dubious.
Ticky tack there, but. Speaking of Martavis, I mean, this guy's got to start catching some of these balls down the field. Now, he did make a couple of nice grabs during the game, so I want to make sure to point that out. A couple of clutch catches, but, I mean.
Right through his arms.
You can't.
Right through his arms.
I mean, you just can't have that. I mean, that's a big play right there willing to happen. Now, it was great to see him. Look, keep him back there returning kickoffs. I mean, more than anything, and I think I said this the other day, It gets him involved in the game right from the get-go. So any way that you can get him out in space, maybe making plays, do it with him. You don't have a better option anyway. So go ahead and leave Martavis out there. Wilcox, boy, those two penalties were they're never a great time for him. But you know, one of them, I think, kind of ticky-tack. But you know that boy. Didn't they sit? Remember a few years ago when who was the cornerback? The young cornerback that they got from the Raiders that played on special teams, and he had like
D begins with D.
Yeah, he had
number 35.
He had like five special team penalties.
Yeah, ran a 4-3-3 and got a block in the back every damn time.
Yeah, and Tom, I mean, he had like five special team penalties in like two games, and Tom sat him down. You know, so, you know, do you have the luxury to do that with Wilcox? Not right now, really. I mean, as thin as your secondary is, you know, like I said earlier, do you find a way? And here, let's not forget about this aspect. Tyler Matakavich is probably your best 1A special teams player. So, you know, how are you going to replace that? I mean,
You got DHB, you got Connor made a play last night, you got Chicolo and Matakavich and Moats. Those are, you know, those are your key guys.
Boy, Jordan Dangerfield, I don't know if it's going to happen, but don't be shocked if somehow he ends up on this roster this week. You know, I'm not saying cut Wilcox or anything like that, but I know it's tough to accommodate all those defensive backs on the roster. And obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Shazier and his status, whether or not he goes to IR, he's carried, you know, for a couple weeks or what. But Matakavich injury, Shazier's injury, you know, you need some room in here somewhere. I don't know. Maybe Matt Filer. Maybe it's time they cut the cord on Matt Filer for a roster spot, David. You know, maybe that could happen this week as well too. I'm trying to think if there's any, you know, we'll go through this more with a fine tooth comb, I think, on Wednesday here after we watch a little bit more of this tape. Any other kind of overarching thoughts or things that we were expected to maybe get to in this show?
Not 10-2, and to be honest with you, it means, you know, at some winning this game means the significance of the Baltimore game. You know, I don't want to say it's insignificant, but if you're looking just at the Patriots, and if you think the Steelers can win their last two, which, you know, no guarantees, you got to beat the Texans and the Browns, you still got to play the games. But, you know, they had a little bit of wiggle room. They got by Cincinnati on the road. Certainly, if they get a win against Baltimore, they will be staring kind of almost guaranteed at, you know, one of the top two seeds in a bye. So this is significant in that respect. If they put another one on the scorecard on Sunday night at home, that'll be 11 wins with three games to go. They're going to be in great shape, you know, for a first round bye.
Yeah. And you know what the narrative would be if the Steelers beat the Ravens, they were supposed to, and if they didn't, they were looking ahead to the Patriots. I mean, it's so predictable with major and national media, you know, with these things. Yeah, blah blah blah. Look, I mean, they you could see that go into play early, like we said, with some of these clowns on tour. Jason Whitlock, some of these guys, I just don't understand. You know, I guess it's just a shock value with the Bayless and the Whitlock and the Colin Coward. I mean, that's got to be it, right? I mean, is it the shock factor?
Yeah, it's a lot of it. Yeah, it's the, you know, get reaction, get eyeballs. It's that, you know, it's obviously one of the things that was, you know, my radio show. That's one of the things that I didn't do. And some people think that, you know, maybe I should have gone a different way. It is what it is. But yeah,
but
that's
the reason. But if everybody supposedly, they tell you they hate it, somebody's watching it.
Yeah, no, look, people are watching, you know, Barstool Sports and First Take and shows like that, so there is an audience for it.
And look, we play a role in that too at Steelers Depot because they're so crazy and you know, that, I mean, they become easy targets to us, you know, the bloggers, if you will, and all. And, of course, you get reaction and all like that. And look, like it or not, you know, my job is to get as many ears on this podcast and as many eyes on my website. So, and look, if you accuse me of writing a clickbait headline, you haven't followed me very long at all. I prefer four-letter words, sometimes three. I'll never win a Pulitzer, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know, we just write and post what we think, you know, people want to read and look at, and a lot of breakdowns, obviously, and those kind of things, and look forward to a lot of those coming later on this week as well, too. David, boy, I'm exhausted, and this is going to be a two
just
for
getting
one.
Started, yeah.
and it's going to be a two for one day as well too. We got to wrap up the Monday night game. We have to cover everything that's going to happen on this Tuesday. Have to get ready for Wednesday as well too. And you and I should be back at it hopefully with John Eisenberg and maybe Chris Hoak as well.
Chris Hoak will be with us on Friday.
On Friday, okay, with Chris Hoak. So. Unless you have anything else to add, David, I am Dave Bryan. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. And just in the meantime, before you get blocked, and he's David Todd. You can follow him on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, if you don't like what we do, donate anyways. Go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that PayPal button up right navigational bar. Thanks for listening. Everybody, David, that's all I got.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.